Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
You know, I was in that division for 3 years, you know, on different teams playing against them. And there were times that they were on every single pitch. And you're like, how are they doing this? How is this happening? And when we found out how, we were like, well, okay, we got to start changing signs up a lot. And we did. And, you know, the swings actually got worse whenever we started to change the signs up all the time.
Middays on the Score.
Former Cubs catcher Jonathan Lucroy on the Astros. The top of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Does your youth hockey team want to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Visit chicagowolves.com/youth hockey to learn more. Ben Reiter of Sports Illustrated is on Twitter at Ben Reiter, and he's going to be part of a brand new podcast to be named later on Cadence 13. There's a limited run season one about the Astros, because this is the guy that literally wrote the book on the Astros. He's with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Ben, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Good. In retrospect, how does it feel to be the guy who wrote Astro Ball, the new way to win it all, when with every day that goes by, we learn more about the ways they were winning it all?
I was more surprised by this revelation, I think, than anybody. As someone who's devoted so much time to understanding what made this organization tick, stretching all the way back to our Sports Illustrated cover in 2014 through my book Astro Ball, which came out in 2018, really, like, I dove into the innovations that this organization made. And, you know, on some level, I think that those are still worthy of giving credit to, right? Like, they were at the forefront, the vanguard of so much in baseball in a positive way, as far as properly identifying talent, as far as developing talent, as far as valuing it, devoting themselves to a process that's extended several years. Those things are all still true and relevant. Clearly, though, their pursuit of an edge in all things had a dark side to it and led them down a path that has brought them to where we are now.
In retrospect, Ben, looking back, are there things where you go, oh, I see what this was, or this is how they might have hit the ball on me a little bit here, or perhaps, you know, maybe behind this door was lurking some sort of meeting between Codebreaker and Dark Arts?
Not specifically. Look, I was embedded with the front office for a period of time. I was not in every meeting. I was certainly not in the dugout or clubhouse during games. That's not at all to make an excuse for myself. But as I go back through and think, is there something that I might have pulled on and unraveled this? No, I really don't think there was. In any story like this, no matter how much access an organization grants, there's going to be a black box. And there's going to be a lot of stuff in that black box. I assumed a lot of these things were proprietary data and trading techniques that were above board. Clearly, they weren't. But really, listening to that quote you just played from Jonathan Lucroy, like, it's incredible how secret this thing remained. I mean, Lucroy is talking about his experience in the AL West. He was with the Rangers back in 16 and 17. I just can't believe that all of this stayed hidden with so many people knowing about it, suspecting it within the game until just this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's almost easier to hide it from you when you're there, because if you're over here, they know to put the stuff over there, right? It's like a it's like the scene in Always Sunny where Charlie's moving everything around the bar. I wonder, though, in being there, could you feel the pull, the influence that Carlos Beltran had, or the possibility of it existing, one player kind of leading an organization at a march like that?
You know, I want to say, if anything, in my opinion, from my experience, has been overstated, it is the suggestion that Carlos Beltran was in some way kind of a generally malevolent influence in the clubhouse. Like, specifically in this way, clearly he spearheaded, the sign-stealing scheme in a way that was not positive. But, you know, it's simply not true that the younger guys were afraid of him, were under his thumb, that he was exerting some sort of evil influence over the clubhouse. That's really the one part of the story that has not felt right at all to me, and one I'm not buying. Certainly something I'm going to be exploring over the next several months as I report out this podcast.
The Brandon Taubman, Stephanie Apstein incident, and the shameful handling on the Astros' part with every step of that now is seen in a bit of a different context. And Rob Manfred's report addressed the front office culture and the toxicity of their culture. Did you feel that in there with them? Because some of this is only allowed to happen because of just a general way you go about your business. We learned it from Jim Crane after the fact. We're a good team. We won the World Series, and that's that. And I think some of this was obscured with Manfred's misstep and calling the trophy a piece of metal and all this. There still appears to be enough of a cultural issue with some of the people involved remaining employed. Alex Cintron's still the hitting coach. What happens to improve the Astros' culture now?
Right. Well, their publicity efforts have obviously been pretty bad, even before that incident with Brandon Taubman, even going back to their signing of Roberto Osuna. You remember kind of explaining how we're going to have zero tolerance for domestic violence, as long as it doesn't happen in our organization. What happened previously doesn't seem to count. That was clearly botched. Look, I think that there's a finer line, we think, between ruthlessness and just prizing winning over everything else. If anything, I think Jim Crane tended towards ruthlessness as a businessman. That might be how you turn a single U-Haul into a billion-dollar logistics company. I don't know much about that. But really, I think that, you know, prioritizing edge, prioritizing victories, prioritizing being ruthless over everything else, you know, it's a fine culture in baseball. It's probably what most teams do until you take a couple steps too far and then everything collapses.
Talking with Ben Ryder here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. He's the author of Astro Ball, The New Way to Win It All. He is also the co-creator of a podcast coming up here about the Astros' sign-stealing efforts. What's the thing you like to, or you set out to get accomplished with the podcast series, Ben? The number one thing that's on the bullet list.
I think there's been excellent reporting across the board on this scandal. I think that there's a lot more to be told as far as the story about exactly how this scandal came to be. I guess I should say exactly how the activities that led to the scandal came to be, about the environment of the organization, about that, what that says about innovative organizations of all types in our culture. Certainly, I also think there's a lot more work to be done to understand the broader culture of Major League Baseball and how sign stealing fit into this back in 2017, 2018. There's a lot more complexity to it than I think we're seeing now. This is not in any way to excuse what the Astros did. It was wrong, but I think that there's a lot more we can find out about what was considered a cultural norm in baseball back in 2017, and also what other teams were doing.
That's the argument that they're using actually in court, as I don't know how long this Mike Bolsinger lawsuit is actually going to last, how quickly it gets thrown out. But in the first responses, it appears that Astros lawyers are essentially saying, well, everybody does it. It's part of baseball. And if you look at our home road splits, we didn't really benefit that much from it. How closely and what kind of sample size of data do you think we're going to need to find out what the benefit actually was?
I think the data is tough because a lot of the data suggests that this actually wasn't that beneficial to them. But you don't really know what the inputs are because you don't have a firm grasp of exactly when they were stealing signs. Yeah, we can count trash can bangs and things like that, but we don't have a full picture of kind of the inputs as related to the outputs, if that makes sense. Like, maybe they were doing some stuff on the road. However, I think they're right to point out, look, this is something that many teams are doing. Maybe most teams were doing. Is it possible that the Astros, being the Astros, were better at it or worse at it, as you might view it? weaponized it to a degree that no other team did. Were they speeding 100 in a 60 as opposed to 80 in a 60? Yeah, that's certainly possible, but that's the sort of context that I'm really devoted to trying to find out. Again, not in any way to excuse or exonerate what the Astros did, merely to tell the right story and provide a full understanding of what was going on and what it means.
I want to square the circle a little bit in regards to Carlos Beltran and his role and how his role was depicted, because in your book, you talk a lot about adopters, about the idea of finding what's next, embracing what's next. There's a leap of faith aspect to it, to always evolving. And that's sort of a, you know, a romantic American thing. How, I see the Beltran thing as almost a genetic mutation that caused a cancer. That it was by the same principles that they were adopters, that in large part the buying into having somebody catalyze things like Beltran did, it fits with what they were trying to do, just in a really kind of dark way. Does that make sense? That it's within the framework of Astro Ball. They were just adopting something bad and wrong.
That's kind of how I'm thinking about it as well, as far as, you know, prioritizing the edge over everything else, whatever that means. And yeah, I mean, a lot of people are trying to figure out, was this coming from the front office? Was this player directed, as Rob Manfred stated in his report? I think the truth is that it was all of the above, right? Like, the front office set the culture. Carlos Beltran was doing something that, frankly, players and he had been doing his whole career, right? Like, he was excellent at stealing signs by traditional methods.
Right, but not with a camera and machine learning and artificial intelligence. Yeah.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So, like, you can imagine, and this is speculating on my part to a degree, you can imagine a situation in which this guy's been doing this for a long time. All of a sudden, he gets to this organization that provides him tools with which to do this to a level and with a skill that he had never before imagined. I don't necessarily think he's a villain for over time kind of embracing these. Maybe he didn't realize just how over the ledge he had gone. Maybe he did, but didn't think it was so bad. I don't know. Like, these are the questions that I'm asking right now. And I think that, you know, the somewhat simple answers we have at this point can go far deeper.
So here's something I've been thinking about over the weekend, Ben. Cheaters are always outpacing the guys trying to catch the cheaters, right? It's kind of an arms race system.
Yeah.
So at some point, you know, like from the Jonathan Lucroy cut that we played introducing you to the show, you know, they realize that the Astros are stealing signs. They're really good at it. Whether they know there's a camera or not, they change the signs. They switch things up. Well, the Astros will respond to that, right? It's a game of adjustments. At some point, I worry that the guy holding the camera in center field goes, okay, they changed the signs on us. Well, what if I can see the pitcher's grip in the mitt? What if I can tell you, you know, as the splitter's getting held or as the two-seamer's getting framed up or as a curveball's getting worked over in a glove, what's coming there? I don't need the signs for that. He's got to throw it the way he's holding the baseball.
No, I agree with you. There's always a next step you can take. And that's one reason why the commissioner's response is so important as far as not only penalizing what the Astros did, but stopping them or anybody else from doing it forward. But this is the kind of Pandora's box that the league opened when it introduced replay rooms and all this new video into the game back in 2014. Now, the Astros certainly were at the vanguard of exploiting it, or maybe not certainly, most likely it appears were at the vanguard of exploiting it. But yeah, I mean, this is the kind of the logical progression and the one the Astros took. So I honestly, like, as far as solving this, I kind of like the idea of just eliminating technology whatsoever on the field during games. Like, if you see a play, if a manager sees a play that is so obviously miscalled that he wants to challenge it with his naked eye, fine, go ahead. If you want to use video after the game's over to review your swings to help you training, fine, go ahead. But I think if you get that stuff off the field, then a lot of these problems go away.
Mentioned that Alex Cintron is still the hitting coach despite his reported involvement with the sign-stealing scheme. And Tom Kofaser and Derek Vigoa are still in the front office. And they were involved in the initial formulation of these programs that were called Codebreaker and Dark Arts and all that. Are you surprised they're still employed, and should they be?
Slightly surprised. Look, I think that it's right for Rob Manfred to have targeted, as far as his penalties, the top of the organization, the power holders, right? Like, I see the argument that the players should have been punished, all of the people you just mentioned, Vigone and Koch Weiser, should be punished. But, I mean, I think once you start doing that, you open up the possibility that your punishments are going to spread much, much wider than you ever imagined. I genuinely think that the justice that he's levied at this point has been strong enough, assuming that the commissioner does do what he says and investigates all of the other leads he has on this, starting with the Red Sox penalty that we understand will be coming down this week as fully as he can.
If this is widespread, right? I mean, you've seen all kinds of reports and all kinds of players and all kinds of players' nieces who are running fake Twitter handles talk about many teams doing this kind of stuff. Are we watching good baseball if this is what we're watching? Are we watching a product that is, I don't know, maybe it's cheap or whatever, that is a true product?
I think so. Look, I mean, again, not to sound like, you know, the old crotchety guy, but baseball players have been stealing signs for over a century, right? Like, we know that. This is not like a new part of the game. It is new in the way that it was weaponized, right? And I don't think, judging by the players' outrage in large measure, I think that the real-time transmission element mm-hmm. is what really makes people angry and what really makes people inside the game seem as if or believe that the Astros have crossed a line. But no, I mean, you know, on a certain level, it's all gamesmanship. And if the Astros are the outliers, I understand that. I don't think it's right to say that the product we've seen on the field was fraudulent or anything if this was a widespread practice.
But is it good? Like, is that the product that you, like you, Ben Ryder, want to watch? Is that the baseball that you want to watch happen if we know it's widespread?
Oh, man, you're getting philosophical on me now.
Yeah, because I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and I'm not interested in watching a guy know what's coming, then swing at the pitch he knows is coming. I find that much less interesting than the other brand of baseball.
Well, look, I think you can't go back and change history.
That's
I think, like, ideally, you know, I think that's what Rob Manfred was kind of suggesting in a clumsy way when he referred to the commissioner's trophy as just a piece of metal, right? Like, players didn't like that. That was definitely another PR blunder. But he was suggesting that what has happened has happened. You know, like, the journey was what mattered. Those games are what mattered. The experience is what mattered. The trophy is just a symbol of them. You can't go back and change history. All you can do is understand why that happened, penalize those involved to the best of your ability, and kind of move on in such a way, hoping that it won't happen again. So I think that's what we really have to focus on now.
Ben Ryder, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Ben Ryder of Sports Illustrated and an upcoming Astros Scandal podcast that will launch this summer on Cadence 13. You can listen to that via radio.com and radio.com sports. The segment is sponsored by Nutrisystem for Men. Make a resolution to lose weight with Nutrisystem for Men, just like Mully from The Morning Show, who lost some weight over the past 3 months. Join today. When you buy your first month of food, you'll get a month absolutely free. Go to Nutrisystem.com/radio to get started.
Quick update on the NHL trade deadline. I heard Jay Zawoski's voice buzz in during our talk with Ben Ryder. Apparently a little something to keep you updated with.
Yeah, I spoke to a source a few minutes ago, and I'm told the Blackhawks are very underwhelmed with the offers they've received for Robin Leonard so far. There's details I can't share, but I will say that they are right to be underwhelmed with the offers they've received for Robin Leonard so far. So, like we talked about last segment, if the Hawks decide to hang on to Robin Leonard and work to sign him before July, maybe that's better than the return they're getting. Maybe the opportunity to have that chance is better than the trades are being offered. Remember as well, they hold his rights until July 1st. So if they work really hard to get that deal done and they can't, they can go ahead and trade him to a team that wants to sign him ahead of time so that team can get a leg up on signing him so he doesn't reach the open market.
Well, I don't want to look at value in a vacuum here. If at the trading deadline they are exceedingly underwhelmed, maybe that just means Leonard's asking price is a pipe dream.
As far as his free agent deal?
Yeah.
Well, I think what you're looking at right now as of today would be a team looking for a rental. Carolina, for instance, has a lot of goalie injuries, as you know, from what happened this weekend. They need to add a goalie. but they're not willing to pay the price to get one.
And they wouldn't be doing this with the intention of immediately selling, like a Khalil Mack trade with the Bears where they knew that the moment they got him, they were going to sign him to a huge deal.
Exactly. That would be more of the scenario where I just mentioned if they want to trade him towards the end of June to a team who's like, damn, we really want to sign Robin Leonard on July 1st. We talked to his agent. We know we can do it. Let's make a trade with Chicago before he reaches the market and get a deal done. That's a possibility. The Blackhawks did that with Steve Montador, the late Steve Montador, when they signed him. They traded for his rights a couple days before free agency started, got the deal signed, and he was there. So that's an option. So if Leonard doesn't go, just keep in mind, they have some other options between now and July 1st to sign him, to move him. And if they don't like what they're hearing today, they can wait. They can wait a little bit.
Jay, appreciate you. We'll talk again before the 2 o'clock deadline, and I imagine you'll be on the station after the 2 o'clock deadline once things actually get done.
I hope so.
All right, cool. Speaking of creating some options for yourself, the Bears have done a little bit of that salary cap-wise. Prince Amukamara has been cut, and Taylor Gabriel was cut as well. That creates close to quarterback money for the Bears.
Yeah, Friday afternoon news dump as we walked out of here, and then they say goodbye to a couple of well-liked veterans. I know that I saw the outpouring from the media just talking about how accountable and available Prince Amukamara was all the time in good times and bad, and that'll be missed.
Yeah, we'll talk about how the Bears are moving on and what tomorrow's meetings with the media for both Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy may mean and what they'll talk about, what we hope they say, too. A little Bears conversation when we come back. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
It's all good.
Well, we'll find out how good it is when they speak tomorrow. We are looking forward to carrying live the respective press conferences of Bears General Manager Matt Nagy, or General Manager Ryan Pace at 9 and Head Coach Matt Nagy at 10:15. It matters that they are speaking differently. It's, and I don't want this to sound too much like they're in different interrogation rooms being talked to by the same or different investigators.
I would like them to treat it that way.
But that's sort of how I look at this, because what my goal tomorrow is to emerge from this, and I'm always underwhelmed because of their ability to just kind of run out the clock on some of these things. But if the interviews are conducted properly, we might start to find some divergence in how committed they are to Mitchell Trubisky.
Here's hoping. That's the biggest question there, right? At the combine, and as it regards the Bears, it still remains QB2 as your number one bullet point for this offseason. Everything else matters. You know, whether you're keeping Danny Trevathan around or paying Nick Kwiatkowski or changing the responsibilities of the passing game or making a new run game coordinator or whatever it is, all those things matter. But nothing matters more than QB2. And I think as Pace talks tomorrow, I think as Matt Nagy talks tomorrow, we'll learn a little bit more. I hope we learn a lot more. And I hope that those new coaches, especially the way that this offensive, you know, hive mind has been created, I hope
Galaxy
some
Brain
answers. God, I hope it's not Galaxy. It's going to be Galaxy Brain. I hope it provides some sort of insight as to what the offense can do, how it's going to work, and what quarterbacks, plural, are going to be involved in making those decisions and reading those coverages and becoming a master of coverages, as Matt Nagy decided that that Mitch Trubisky needed to be this offseason.
It doesn't matter what they know. All that matters is what Trubisky knows. What do you see? What front is this? What coverage is this?
Yeah.
Based on what you see, what coverages could this also be post-snap? When you're sending a guy in motion, what are you looking for to determine how this coverage could change? What is your progress reads? He is all that matters still, unless he's not. Unless this next thing, unless we determine that whether it's here at the scouting combine or how they're constructing their roster and allocating money, unless there is indication that they'd be desperate enough or enough to see a bad ending to this to just pull the plug and recognize what some people have been get to a place where some people have gotten to already. And I don't know the answer, but we have to sort of read the tea leaves with every discussion that's had. And I hope blunt questions are asked.
They ought to be. There's plenty of space for blunt questions. Because remember, when Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace left the assembled Bears press corps, they left them with the understanding that, yeah, well, we'll figure out about these coaches. We haven't made those determinations yet. We'll see. It kind of sounded like, yeah, we'll do this eventually. We'll get to it. We're having those meetings. We're having a conversation about it. Like 90 minutes later, you found out the guys got fired and the whole room got changed and the whole power structure, the whole dynamic of Bears coaches changed.
Yeah, that was kind of BS.
Not kind of.
To do that immediately after you meet the media. Oh, by the way, all the coaches are fired.
That's it's just total
like,
BS.
Like a Stalinist
Listen,
purge.
I get angry every time we do this and have this kind of conversation around this sort of thing, but only for the fans, right? This idea that And you get it all the time from baseball managers, you know, because you get in the morning of a day game or something, and then the first question about Bryant's ankle or Rizzo's shoulder or Darvish's hip or whatever it is, right? Oh, hey, how's you doing? And it's the first question out.
Brandon Morrow's anything?
Brandon Morrow's everything. How are Brandon Morrow's pants? And then the answer you get from the manager is, I'm going there next. Just got in. Got my cup of coffee. Haven't gone there yet.
It's the Joe Madden show.
I'm going. Of course it is. It's the Joe Madden move. And I can't stand it because managers and teams understand that these are the first questions of your assembled press corps, that fans want to know if your guy's going to start today or if Morrow's coming back today or if his pants have put him on the DL again, you know? And to do this in a way, it's like, oh, you know, I just got up. I just got in here. I just poured my coffee into this giant thermos and I have to drink it out of here first before I go check on my injured guy. This was just another way of doing exactly that. Of making institutional change and changing the structure around the most important person in the Bears organization, save Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, Mitch Trubisky, around this guy, and then not having to deal with any of the fallout from it. And I guess in a way you can admire it because they've got, what, two months, right, from that presser to this one tomorrow to figure out how they're all going to work together. To talk about what job responsibilities they actually have, what passing game coordinator really means, and how every guy works with Mitch, this, that, and the other. But shoot, man, I think football teams are getting so closeted with the way they talk about how they're trying to win football games. And it's more and more frustrating every season for me.
Angry texter alert from the 312. Backup quarterback is more important than a competent tight end or guard?
Yes.
Football stupidity.
No.
First of all, that was never said by anyone. And second of all, we're not talking about a backup quarterback. We're talking about finding out how open the Bears brain trust is going to be to the necessity of having to turn to a different starting quarterback.
Yeah. Quarterback's the most important position in football. The Bears' backup quarterback is the second most important position on the team, and that backup quarterback could very well be Mitch Trubisky in a couple of months. I doubt that's going to be the case. And here's what it is, too. You and I gave Ryan Pace hell after that press conference. It was on during our show. We listened to it live, and neither of us cared for the way he talked about Mitch. Neither of us cared for the way he reinforced the idea that Mitch is going to be the Bears starter in 2020.
They saw the good moments. Development is nonlinear. They think he hasn't played enough football. This is just development.
They're so damn obsessed with moments. And it drove me nuts.
Yar.
You're welcome. But the thing of it is, I got told for the month after that, that don't believe what Ryan Pace said. You know, I got told from people who were there, don't believe what he said, believe what he does. Don't put, you know, it's fine. He just said these things. He has to say those things. what else would you have him say? And I gave you concrete answers, concrete examples of how else he could talk about it. Look at Chris Ballard. Look at the way he talked about his quarterback position at the end of the season. There are ways to talk about your situation that are better and more forthright while still giving you the organizational flexibility of making change this offseason, of winning football games this offseason. But I got told over and over again, okay, just, you know, don't believe what he says, believe what he does. This is Ryan Pace's chance. I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to have that entire rant and rave thrown back into my face and say, look, they did something. It's not just Case Keenum coming in here to maybe start a couple of games if Mitch falls off a cliff like Wile E. Coyote. It's not Jacoby Brissett coming in here after the Colts have picked up Phillip Rivers or something like that. And now you've got this guy that, yeah, you know, fine, good, you know, something like that. But really, it's a guy that Mitch can beat because we want Mitch to beat him. I hope that his actions speak louder than his words. I really do. But I don't think it's going to happen that way.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join the Wildcats at Welsh Ryan Arena this Thursday when they host Illinois at 7 p.m. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I don't think anything has happened other than the coaching staff changes that were actually happening the last time they talked, and they have to double back on some of that stuff. But I don't think we should expect all of a sudden Ryan Pace is going to change his tune. I think I'm expecting more of the same. I'm expecting more of, you know, we believe in Mitch. What's the deadline for picking up the fifth-year option?
It's just prior to the league year, right? Yeah, it's prior to the league year beginning.
So that's post or pre-draft, right?
Yeah, pre-draft, pre-free agency. It's this. Is it the 24th of March?
Because that's coming up. And when you say watch what they do, not what they say,
right?
That's a big do.
Of course it is.
That's a huge do. And Pace has got to know that we're watching that.
I think that would be one of the first questions asked to Ryan Pace. I mean, I think even before the conversations about coaches and everything else.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
But you have to be. I mean, that's the thing. That will be a lie. He can't actually say with the deadline on that fifth-year option for Mitch coming up in a matter of weeks and a combine.
It's in early May.
Okay,
my apologies. Still, I mean, that's a matter of weeks, and that's first order of business. That's putting $24 million, a potential 24, on the books for your team. That's one thing. That's one can he can't kick real far down the street.
That's the order of the questions then. Are you going to pick up Mitchell Trubisky's fifth-year option? Yeah, we haven't. We're not there yet. We haven't. Okay, why not?
How could you not be?
How could you not be there yet? What is taking your time instead of that? Where are you in deciding that?
Well, we're figuring out how our coaches all feel about this quarterback and stuff, which will also be nonsense because one of the conversations that you're having with each and every coach you bring in is what do you think of Mitch? Mm-hmm. I mean, those things—they're all on the record.
You're talking about in these meetings.
Part of the reason you've hired Bill Lazor and John DeFilippo is because of what they think about Mitch. Now, I don't know what they actually think about him. I'd love to know that. I would love to hear this. But you hire them because of what they think about that quarterback and the position and whether or not it dovetails with the way you're trying to go as a franchise.
We are watching the NHL trade deadline that is just about 2 hours and 20 minutes from now. It's the end of our extended show. Jay Zawoski talking to sources, monitoring reports to let you know what the Blackhawks may be doing. So if something does happen, we'll be the first to let you know. Also, while we're talking football, I've got the kind of oratorical ability from a professional football coach that will have you ready to run through a wall.
A regular Rockne? Like a real come to Jesus, let's go get him squad?
All I'm saying is you're going to want to run through a wall.
Oh, all right. I love this stuff. Let's get football-y. Some audio you will not want to miss. Next, Bernstein and McKnight on the Score. At 0-3, the Tampa Bay Vipers sit at the very bottom of the XFL. Defeats of 23-3, 17-9, and 34-27 have them winless. But the measure of a coach is getting a team from the bottom to the top, reaching the very souls of these players and finding it within them to rise to the top of the standings, to a championship game. And that task falls to none other than Tampa Bay Vipers head coach Mark Trestman.
Not much to say after 3 weeks, right? Very difficult. We're a much better team today than we were a week ago, but we weren't good enough to win.
And so I just want to leave you with this. Don't quit on yourselves. Don't give up on yourselves, because you got what it takes in this room to get it done. And listen to this. Don't get entitled. Remember where we were 7 months ago when we were looking for an opportunity to play the game that we loved. Don't give up on yourselves. There's a good football team in there. You're going to have to decide that for ourselves. We're going to have to, right? Because we're all in three. So I can give you all the keep it going. We got a lot to live for, and we do. But we love football in this room. Your coaches love coaching you in this room. I encourage you to be a team that sticks together, that continues to grow together. And let's just find out who the hell we are as we move into next week. It will not be easy. We'll be a better team next week. We can make it happen. You have to make it happen inside your heart. For us to get this done, you have to go to your heart right now and make it. Make sure that you're taking care of what you need to take care of, so you give this team every chance you can next week.
Now, I am ready to run through a wall into oncoming traffic. I didn't say run through a wall for good reasons. I want to run into a wall. Over and over and over again.
And then the next wall, and then the next wall.
The best part.
Until my time comes.
We've got so much to live for. Because you're picturing, like, he wasn't going to say that, but he looks in the back, and one of the linemen is pouring a can of gasoline over his head.
Loading a revolver.
Right, Frankie Pentangeli is drawing a warm bath.
We got a lot to live for, and we do.
Challenge.
Yeah. Challenge flag is out.
I don't think so.
Coach, what do we have to live for? We're 0-3 in a low rent league.
I like the part. I loved the part where you're about a minute and a half into the speech and he realizes he's lost everyone. It's just before we have a lot to live for. And he inserts the hell right in there. We got a hell of a lot to play. Just this random inserted swear word. He's like, oh, I've heard people do this before. Mm-hmm. I'll put this one in here. I'll wake them up with a we gotta win a hell of a football or something. God, he's just the worst.
Give him credit. At least he was in the front of the room making this speech and not behind all the players this time.
That's true. They're not looking at him. That's the Jim Boylan trick where you call a timeout with 10 seconds left to have so you can coach really hard and the players are on their phones. They're not looking at you or listening to you.
God, we got a lot to live for, and we do.
You're right.
You just gotta be like, dude. Come on.
We could make a conversation between the two of them, Mark Trestman and Jim Boylan.
Think we have enough sound?
Yeah. I think we do.
The best is at the end of that recent press conference when Boylan's like, JoJo, you got anything? And Callie's like,
You actually hear him moving away from the microphone. Right, Joe's just like,
I'm going to go over here and throw up. The Mark Trestman inspirational oratory.
My God, is that
there
fantastic.
You go get him.
At least the Bears don't have him involved.
That movie? I haven't heard any of that. I didn't hear all of it. I heard a lot about most of it, but what I did hear, I did not hear any of that.
He even had it on your heart.
Of course he did.
Yeah, trust me, that has to be in your heart.
That's where coaches hide their things.
Yeah, you never know, the timeout can be found in there.
Loose change.
You never know. I didn't call the timeout. It was on my heart. What the hell are you talking about? The timeout was on my heart.
Oh, God.
Maybe that's why at the ends of games, he reaches into his heart and he discovers that he's got a timeout
there. The cell phone that he had to take away from Zach because he wasn't paying attention.
There's 10 seconds left, but there's a timeout. Where? On my heart.
Coach, where'd you put my iPhone? It's in my heart.
What?
God, that's amazing.
That's what he do.
Absolutely fantastic is what that is.
I'm not the coach. He's the coach. That's what he do. This segment is brought to you by Illini Care Health. You deserve quality health care. Choose Illini Care Health for health care coverage that includes free gym memberships, after school care, and school uniforms that either you or your family can take advantage of. Visit IlliniCare.com today. Illini Care Health is a health choice Illinois plan.
Hey, not for nothing. We were talking a lot about the Bears, the cuts of Prince Amukamara and Taylor Gabriel creating $13.5 million in cap space. What that means for the Bears' quarterback position and just how much money they're going to be willing and able to allocate to quarterback number two, which I think is the most important piece on the Bears in 2020. Sure, there are other important pieces. That's the most important, though. Just look at the quarterback position around the league. You'll find out I'm right. But another piece of conversation here is how other free agents alter their ability to pay that quarterback. I was reading Albert Breer over the weekend, and he offered, it was a handful of names, but a handful of players about to, it wasn't like strike it big or anything like that, but get paid that you've never heard of.
Sort of like what Trey Burton was when the Bears made the commitment to him.
A lot like that. Yeah. You want to guess one of the names that was on Albert Breer's list, a name that...
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
Nick Kwiatkowski.
You're damn right. That was one of the names on the guys that nobody's heard of, you know, outside of Bears fandom.
He's got the big flashing light on him to be that
strike
guy.
It yep. rich. Yeah, so I think that's an interesting part of the conversation, too. The Leonard Floyd $13 million commitment that's on there as well. And when we're talking about fifth-year options and whether or not the Bears are going to offer one to Mitch Trubisky, remember, I love this about our text line, 67011. And by the way, the text zone's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. We were talking about the fifth-year option for Mitch in the last segment. Consecutive texts. One was, they will not pick up the fifth-year option. It would be so stupid. The next one was, they will absolutely pick up the fifth-year option.
Already
it's done already.
And
what a
it.
Stupid question. Yeah, it's, I love that we're there on Bears quarterbacks, right? But the fifth-year option is only guaranteed for injury, right? So if he gets hurt, whether it's Floyd we're talking about or whether it's Trubisky in his fifth year, then you have to pay him. He doesn't get hurt, it's a cuttable dollar. It's not dead money. You're able to maneuver around it. It's only guaranteed for injury. So part of the next, I would guess, series of moves that the Bears are going to make isn't likely to include cutting Leonard Floyd, at least from my mind. They've got enough invested with him, and that front office is one that, my God, they get their guy, and they seem pretty invested in him. But you have to narrow out that money. You cannot pay Leonard Floyd $13 million for the amount of production that he's given you in the passing game. You have to take a quarterback down more often than Leonard Floyd does for $13 a year.
This is where we learn if the logic they use to inoculate against Mitchell Trubisky criticism is also applied elsewhere similarly.
It won't be.
Moments. If you really see moments, if you really see nonlinear development, if you see a young guy that you traded up to get, that you believe in, and if you're judging development by moments this far in, that's got to also apply to Leonard Floyd. Now, I don't think it does, because I think they're over-justifying their continued commitment to Mitchell Trubisky.
Right. And honestly, I really don't have a problem with that as a premise. I do think that a football team, that an NFL team, should operate differently when it comes to a quarterback than any other position on the field. They're different. They're completely, wholly different. They're so different that I've become a huge fan of the idea of a quarterback salary cap. This idea that you take, you have your team, and whatever the number you want to cap your team expenditures at is fine, and then you take your quarterbacks and you put them over here on a separate list, with a separate dollar amount that you can pay all of these quarterbacks.
Or you have a graduated system where you've got three different slots.
Fine.
And you can have this, and this.
Fine. I'm fine with all of that stuff. Quarterbacks should be treated differently because they are, and because they're also treated differently by the rules of the game. Why not make it official? Why not put your money where your rules are and go ahead and slice those quarterbacks off from the roster in a different way? Yeah, it'll cause division between high money makers on one side of the ball and the other. But aren't we already there?
I always say the two most significant individual positions in all of professional sports are the quarterback and the hockey goalie.
Sure.
Those are the ones that make that kind of difference. And we're talking about all of that today as we're looking at whether or not the Blackhawks are going to trade Robin Leonard at some point in the next couple hours. They're also two of the most sort of mysterious positions. Few are more mercurial and mysterious than goaltending because it's just so damn weird.
Yeah.
And hockey's so weird. And football's a little more quantifiable there. There is something called an emergency quarterback, but it's usually designated by the team as somebody already on their team and not the Zamboni driver,
right.
Not one of the grounds crew, not somebody who's sitting in the stands who you then pull out, because it happened again, much like the famed the Scott Foster night here in Chicago, where the Blackhawks were more than happy to be that team and have that story, and now they're not. Now it's the Leafs.
Yeah, now you've got a completely different story. Two goaltenders go down, and this guy comes in and gives up the first two, right, but then saves 8 out of 10 to preserve what was a 6-3 win.
And the fact that guy's
emergency backup goaltender, which has never happened before.
But he's 42. Yeah. That's the other thing. That most E-Bugs are like, you know, right out of college, right out of high level playing. A lot of former pros that played in, you know, minor league hockey that are still, you know, fully capable and still play, I know, in the Elite League here in Chicago. And that's, you know, the Elite League here at Johnny's.
Yeah.
It's really good hockey. And like the difference between elite and A.
Yeah.
Because it goes A, B, C. And now, since we're at Johnny so often, I get to see a lot of these games.
Is that all age? Like the same age of guys that play Elite would also play A? They're just not as good? Or do they separate
sometimes,
those
sometimes
by
they
age
play
as
both.
Well?
Like I know Scott Foster, I've seen him in A games, and he also plays Elite. But Elite, they've got scouting reports for their games. I've seen them.
Really?
Because I know guys who play Elite. Yeah, like they've got their upcoming opponent. They will get information on an upcoming opponent. And I was looking at one of the rosters. Everybody was either former pro, drafted by the NHL,
yeah,
or D1, like high-end D1, Harvard, yeah, Miami of Ohio, yeah, Notre Dame. These were all really good players. And I, you know, you watch an A-level game, mm-hmm, like, oh, yeah, these are good. But you see on their shorts, it'll be a Division II team, a Division III team, some other club stuff. But Chicago Elite League, these are former Ivy League high-end players, a lot of whom were drafted or played some level of pro hockey.
David Ayers was the first star of the game and got an ovation from Leafs fans there. He's the emergency backup goaltender who came in for Carolina and went ahead and won that game. Kyle Bodie, the driveline guy, fist
is
bump.
Is it Bodie or Bodie?
It's Bodie.
It is.
I was listening to Ben Lindbergh of The Ringer talk about it. He says Bodie. He knows the guy. Okay. I'm going with Bodie.
Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. He's a good follow. Yeah, lots of content.
He wrote this for people who aren't all big hockey fans. David Ayers is 42 years old. He played 28 minutes and stopped 8 of 10 shots in a 6-3 win. This would be, and I'm sure Kyle's just kind of making this up at some point, but this would be like a 38-year-old adult league pitcher who sits 81 with a horrible breaking ball going 4 innings and 3 earned in a major league regular season game. It is insane.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Just a guy out there getting it done some way or another.
Yeah, it was being explained to me, and this is by one of the Blackhawks E-Bugs, about the difference between the different levels and just how good NHL shooters are. That he just talked about the space that a goalie can allow that's exploitable. And he said if...
Like within their frame,
yes,
or on the other side?
In general, within their frame and relative to the goal.
Okay.
About how you have to look at the space that you allow because of how good NHL shooters are at finding a tiny little target. It's like talking about pitchers or, you know, an NFL quarterback that can throw it into small windows. That he said that at the Division I college level, you can allow maybe, you know, 2 pucks wide and 1 puck in the other vector
high,
there.
Right.
Puck high, yeah. Right. And you shrink that when you go to the pros. If you go to, like, you know, a Chicago Wolves game, it's maybe half that. And he said, in the NHL level, you're talking about an area that is just slightly larger than the puck.
Come on.
That people are able to find. It doesn't really have to be that big. I mean, obviously, there are plays where you're going to end up with half a net open. But in general, a shooter who's trying to get it through a spot, that he says they will find it. If it is larger than the puck, their eyes are trained to see it, or they will bait you in a way to get you to move in a way that exposes that space.
My God.
Yeah. He just with his fingers, he's like, you know how much space you can allow?
Yeah.
This much.
I.
It's like when you talk about the difference between a web.com tour golfer and the top of the PGA. Darn Patrick Reed.
Your guy.
Fat bastard.
Your guy. Ruined my weekend. Love Patrick Reed, don't you?
Anybody but him. Anybody but him. God, I can't stand him. Any of those guys but him. Even the guy from Africa I've never heard of
imagine
before.
Imagine caring about Patrick Reed as much as Dan
yeah,
does.
Yeah, I know. He's renting space in my head.
Yeah,
he
just, that's true. It's
such a bastard. He really is.
I love but this. What was it? It was his Masters
he's
win.
He's also settling the grass in that area in your head.
Yeah, but the guys that talk about the golfers, you know, being, you know, 4 feet of difference.
Yeah.
He said the difference between, you know, fighting for your tour card every year, scratching, clawing for your tour card and being at the top of it can just be, you know, that landing a ball 4 feet closer on average, having that approach, giving you that shot at birdie.
We had the debut of a brand new sports network over the weekend. The Marquee Network is out, and Jim DeShays was part of the debut.
Cool.
As it happens, JD is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. Bernstein and McKnight has the extra extended tour. We're covering Lawrence Holmes' shift, and JD is going to kick it off next on The Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.